Welcome to the Duck Pod. From the Register Guard newsroom, here's Ryan Thorburn and Austin Meek.
All right, we're back for another episode of the Duck Pod. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Ryan Thorburn joined by Austin Meek. Per usual, Austin, it's the dog days of summer. What should we talk about today?
Well, we have a great guest today. Mike Bellotti is going to join us, former Oregon football coach, of course, soon to be inducted into the UO Athletics Hall of Fame. He's not the first Hall of Fame induction for Mike, but a nice honor nonetheless. And, you know, it's that time of year when it's always good to catch up with some folks who have some stories to tell. And Mike's got some pretty good stories to tell. He saw, you know, he kind of saw the whole scope of Oregon football from where it started to what it became. You know, he was kind of the link between the two eras, the beginning of it and the ultimate product. So he's got a pretty fascinating perspective.
Absolutely. I think maybe some younger people might think it started and ended with Chip Kelly's amazing run. But Oregon actually was at a national championship level under Mike Bellotti. Obviously, he replaced Rich Brooks after that magical 94 season. But in 2001, they were essentially the number two team in the nation. Unfortunately, the BCS did not give them a crack at Miami. But, you know, that Miami team is historic. But definitely Oregon was the number two team in the nation that year. And as we know, they've been runner-up in a few national championships along the way. Had some bad luck in some other years where they had those type of teams. But that's one thing I've enjoyed. I've been here almost 6 years now. Same timeline as you is Mike Bellotti, Nick Aliotti, Rich Brooks. These guys are still around. They're accessible, and they really help you glean some institutional knowledge about the program from them, and that's why I'm really looking forward to hearing from Bellotti today.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this with Mike in a minute, but you know, one thing that I pick up from Oregon fans just when I'm out and about, and I think, you know, you say the more, you know, level-headed, reasonable Oregon fans, if there's one sentiment from them, it's like, you know, it would be great to be the program that we were for those 4 years with Chip Kelly. But really, if we could just get back to being the program that we were under Mike Bellotti, that would be great. You know, you're relevant every year. You have a winning record. You're in a bowl game. And you have those years where everything comes together and you're in the hunt for a national championship or the college football playoff. I asked Mike this. I'll ask you this. Do you think that's what the future holds for Oregon under Mario Cristobal? Because he's only been here a year. There's so much yet to be determined with Mario Cristobal. But is that sort of the trajectory that you see for this program now with Mario?
It's a great question. The way they're attacking recruiting, they're not attacking it like they just want to be in the Holiday Bowl. Obviously, they're attacking it like we want to compete with Alabama and Clemson in terms of class rankings. And once you stack four or five of those in a row, you know, you should be in the college football playoff hunt. So that's why I'm so fascinated by this upcoming season. You know, Mario's coached in the Las Vegas Bowl. He's won the Red Box Bowl over Michigan State. So now you would think maybe an Alamo Bowl is in the future, but yet they have Justin Herbert. They have a lot of pieces back on defense, a great offensive line. I see them like on that line between, you know, going to a nice bowl game versus maybe contending for that Pac-12 championship. And even though the conference is down, you win the Pac-12, you're going to at least be discussed for the college football playoff. Fascinating season. They're teetering right on what you're talking about, just respectable year in, year after year versus going for their first national championship.
Yeah, I think one of the lessons of Mike Bellotti's tenure is when you have that team that is capable of being a national contender, you got to make it count. And Mike Bellotti's teams did that. You know, when they had Joey Harrington, when they had Dennis Dixon, those teams made a run at the national championship. They didn't win one, but they were in the picture. And if you're doing that in those years, then if you have a year in there where you go 7-6 or you go 8-5, fans will be patient with you. They'll stick they'll stick through those tougher years if they know that you can, if you can make it count when you have the team that's capable. And I think that's going to be the question for Mario Cristobal, because on paper it looks like he has that team now. It looks like this Oregon team is one that should be in the hunt for the college football playoff. And if they don't get there, I think that there is going to be some, you know, some sentiment from the fans that we had that team this year and we didn't make it. What are we going to do in the years when we don't have that team, when we have a new quarterback, when we have a bunch of injuries? I think that's going to be really fascinating to watch.
It sure is. So without further ado, let's get to our guest, Mike Bellotti, College Football Hall of Famer and now soon to be University of Oregon Athletics Hall of Fame member.
Okay, we're back with our guest, former Oregon football coach and soon to be UO Athletics Hall of Famer, Mike Bellotti. Mike, thank you for joining us. When I got that release that you were headed into the Hall of Fame, I admit I assumed that you were already in there, but I know that there's a waiting period, so this is probably the first year that you were eligible. But congratulations on that. Certainly a well-deserved honor. You've had a lot of those in your career, but I guess just to start off, what does it mean to you to be going into the UO Athletics Hall of Fame?
Well, I'm very pleased and honored. I mean, you know, it's either 10 years or you have to die. So I like the fact that I'm 10 years out and still around. But I know a lot of my players and friends said, I thought you were already in the Hall of Fame. I think some of the teams that I was associated with are in the Hall of Fame, but this is the first time for me, I guess, in this regard. And no, I'm excited. I'm pleased. I think that obviously anytime you get this type of an honor, it's really about the people you were surrounded with and the kind of players and the kind of coaches. And I was very fortunate to have be in the right place at the right time, have the right people around me, and we all pulled together to make that thing happen.
I think one reason people assume that is because you actually in 2014 were inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, which is a great honor. I remember speaking to you that summer and you said it was going to be a humbling experience. What was that summer like and going to New York and all that stuff? And what do you think the emotions will be like this time? Probably the same thing, but more of a local flavor.
You know, it was an outstanding experience, and my entire family was back there and a lot of friends and, you know, that type of thing. My son the other day, Luke, who played for me at Oregon, said, Dad, is this going to be even more special because it's more people you know? I said, well, yeah, on the one hand it is. In a scale of 1 to 10, it's always going to be a 10 to get any time you're inducted into a Hall of Fame thing. But here at Oregon, where I have a lot of friends and people that I know and players that played for me, and the majority of my time was spent here, it is very special, and it's going to make, I think, a difference. And it's nice, and it's something that I appreciate. It makes you look back on your time and say, wow, you know, did you ever think when you did this or this or this that it was going to result in becoming a Hall of Fame member? And I guess at the time you hope it was, but it's not your primary goal. Primary goal is usually survival, winning the recruiting battle, winning the game, you know, trying to keep everything moving forward. I laugh when people say, well, what do you do in the off season? And I said, there is no off season. You know, football is 24/7, 365, whether it's recruiting, working out, practicing, competing, playing. And, you know, those are the kind of people, the people that understand that are and the people that embrace that are the people that you want around you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of those recruiting battles, one of them that worked out well for you was recruiting Max Unger, who's going to go into the Hall of Fame with you this fall. Did you, when you were recruiting him in Hawaii, did you see a guy who you thought was going to be a, you know, future Pro Bowler and have a decade-long career in the NFL? What do you remember, I guess, about his recruiting process?
I don't know if I saw that, but I saw a big body that had a little streak of meanness in him, that had some pride, that had some athletic ability for a guy that size. And he was a little bit laid back in high school, but once we got him here, he wasn't laid back when the game started. And I feel like I had the distinct honor and privilege to coach maybe the best offensive lineman and the best defensive lineman ever to play at Oregon. They both retired this year, Max Unger and Haloti Ngata, and their careers were very similar in terms of the amount of acclaim they got at the next level. And I love those guys. I mean, those guys, to me, embodied Oregon football, what we wanted. They were great people. They were both sort of gentle giants, but, I mean, watch out. When they got mad and when they turned it on and they had that extra little ability, that nerve synapse to push it, no matter how big they were. And Max was, you know, he played left tackle and offensive center for us. He could have played anywhere in the offensive line, just as Haloti could have played anywhere, maybe on the field, defensive line, offensive line, whatever. But the fact that they both retired this year, there's a certain amount of sadness in me because I always want to watch them play, but also pride in the fact that they're Oregon Ducks.
Mike, I'm curious. I mean, the 1994 season was and remains so fond in the hearts of so many Oregon fans. I'm curious, that was such a special ride to get to the Rose Bowl for the first time in 37 years. Once you were elevated to head coach the next season after Rich Brooks and some staffers went to the NFL, what was kind of your mindset? Did you want to put your own stamp on it or just kind of continue what was building before? What was kind of your approach to being the head coach for the first time at Oregon?
Well, I'd been a head coach before. We were certainly coming off the most successful season in a long, long time at Oregon. You certainly want to continue that success. But at the same time, you are, whether you want to or not, you're going to put your own stamp on the program. When more than half the coaches left, I had to hire a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator, new special teams guy. So you're going to quickly figure out, you know, who you are and what you want to be. But certainly we didn't want to derail any of the success. And so you sort of try to err on the side of keeping it simple for the players, trying to maintain a similar system of what you do, and put the onus on the coaches coming in to make sure that the players don't have to take a step backwards. And I thought we did that. I mean, we went to the Cotton Bowl, didn't play as well in that game, but I think overall I really felt good about where we were, the people I hired, and the way the players responded to me as the head coach.
Mike, when I talk to Oregon fans, and I think this is a compliment to you, a lot of them, the feeling I get is they think, you know, if we could just get back to being the program that we were during the Bellotti years, we would love that. You know, a program that has a winning record pretty much every year, that is in a bowl game pretty much every year, and in your good years when you've got, you know, a core group that you've had together for a while, maybe you make a run at that national championship or that college football playoff. When you look at where Oregon is now, and there's been a lot of turnover and turmoil over the last few years, but it seems like now Mario Cristobal has some momentum. Do you feel like Oregon is close to getting back to that point? What do you see now when you look at the program that Mario Cristobal is putting together?
Well, I think you've got to look at two or three things. One is the investment in facilities, and certainly that has continued. The Hatfield Dowling Complex now puts Oregon in the top 5 or 10 in the nation in terms of facilities, which has always been one of our trademarks. I think we had to build something here that people would want to come to, want to see, would attract their attention, get them to come visit, and then we had a chance to get them. I think then you have to evaluate correctly. You've got to recruit hard, and then you've got to develop the talent that you sign. And I think Mario has done a great job. I think he's a great recruiter. I think his, so far the rankings of his classes prove that. He's got to continue to develop that talent and find ways. And it's not always about just one particular system or one particular play that's going to define whether an offense or a defense. It's more about how can I put my players in a position to have success. When you have better players, it's a little bit easier. And I think that certainly the caliber of the recruit coming in is now as good as it's ever been. You've got a returning offensive line. You've got a returning quarterback. You've got the leader of the defense that came back for a senior year. You've got great recruiting classes that have added bulk and athleticism to the entire team. Is Oregon there yet to compete for a national championship? I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that certainly we're going to find out a little bit when they play Auburn to start to kick off the season this year. But I do believe that Oregon should and will compete year in, year out. for the North Conference Championship, for the Pac-12 Conference Championship. And then the Pac-12 has some issues to deal with, both in its own right, about competing on a national basis. And the scheduling differences between the Pac-12 and some of the other conferences, the importance of football, the recruiting, the year-round commitment to football. I think Mario has come from a program in Alabama that understands how to do that. So he's trying to put his footprint, his imprint on this program. And how successful it'll be down the road will depend on, can he continue to recruit and find the best athletes? Will the style of play that he wants on offense and defense, will Andy Avalos be the answer on defense to continue to improve, to allow them to win games on defense, not stay in games, but win games on defense? So there's a lot of questions, but I think that from the standpoint of facilities, from the standpoint of support for Mario Cristobal and his staff, he seems to be able to go out and find people now that want to come to Oregon. He's certainly found enough players that want to come to Oregon. Now it's how successful will that ride be in Autzen Stadium?
Well, speaking of Oregon competing for national championships, in 2001 you guys did just that, and I happened to be at that time covering Gary Barnett's team in Boulder, so I was at the Fiesta Bowl where you guys dominated a really good Colorado team. I'm just curious your perspective on that season and what that might have looked like if there were a college football playoff. Obviously, you guys had the great argument to be number two and to play Miami in the championship. It didn't work out that way. Nebraska ended up going, a team that was blown out by Colorado a few weeks earlier. What do you remember about, you know, that BCS system and just that particular season where there were really three quality teams that had an argument to be number two and to play for the championship?
I was quoted that year as saying the BCS is a cancer, and that quote came because I said sometimes when you get hurt, when somebody else gets hurt, you don't realize the pain. When it happens to you, when you're dealing with it, it's much more personal. And to tell our players that we weren't going to get a chance despite being ranked number two in both polls and all that, and feeling like we had justified that opportunity and not get it, was very, very difficult. And then certainly for Colorado to have defeated Nebraska the way they did in the championship game, and then for us to have defeated Colorado in the Fiesta Bowl certainly proves my point. Now, whether we'd had the firepower to, I'm sure we would have been closer had we played Miami than Nebraska was. In fact, I actually did. That was my first television gig they brought me in, and I actually was a sideline analyst for that game, for that national championship game. But I just felt like that year, you know, we had a lot of things go right. We kept people healthy. We had a couple things go wrong in the one game, the Stanford game. And my hat's off to Stanford. They got an onside kick. They got a deflected pass, intercepted both in the fourth quarter, that helped turn that game around. And they did some things, and they were successful, and we didn't quite get it done. But I still felt that we were certainly the team most qualified to play in the national championship. And frustrating that our players never got that opportunity. And I said, I'll get a chance, we'll get a chance to be here again, but not this group of young men. For them, this is the last opportunity. And that was what I guess hurt my soul the most. And then certainly, like I said, in 2005, I think we were 10-2, and both USC and Oklahoma forfeited the games to us later, but they didn't make us 12-0 in the national champ. And then when Chip took the team to the national championship and lost to Auburn. So I knew that Oregon, because it's a special place, and actually the reason I stayed at Oregon, despite having opportunities to go elsewhere, was because accomplishing what we did at Oregon, in my mind, counted for more. It was more special, and maybe a little bit more difficult accomplishment than it might have been somewhere else, but to do it was, and to be part of that process, was amazing. Success is a journey, not a destination, and I think you're always continuing on that journey.
Yeah, the story of how this program was built, going back to Rich Brooks and your tenure and up through Chip Kelly, I think is a great story that all Oregon fans should know well and know where this program came from and how it was built. And as Mario Cristobal now tries to build on that. You referenced his abilities as a recruiter. From your perspective, has recruiting changed a lot since you were a coach? Do you think that if you were doing it now, how do you think that you would feel about the pressure and the nonstop nature of recruiting right now?
You know, it began 10 or 15 years ago. So I was involved with it. We had to have multiple phones. You had to be on social media. You had to do all the things they're doing now. It's just ramped up to the next degree. And the amount of early commitments and early and the flip-flops that occur because of the early commitments would be extremely frustrating to me. And one of the things that I always like to feel like when you gave your word, your bond to somebody as a coach or as a player, back to a coach, that was pretty much an agreement. That was a signed, sealed, delivered kind of thing. We handshake on it, we announce it, and that's not the way it is anymore. That would be totally frustrating. But we had the same thing started. You know, when I first started coaching 50 years ago, you had a summer off. You really did have a summer off. You go do some camps, but you had a month in the summer that you didn't do anything. Players went home, and then it gradually changed to where the players are in summer school. They're on your campus. You don't have a vacation because somebody's going to be coming by for an unofficial visit, and you need to be there if you're the offensive coordinator or the head coach to meet with those people. I think the last 2 or 3 years I was a head coach, I never had more than a week or 3 or 4 days where I could be away that I would have to come back and meet with a recruit and their family because they were coming through town on their recruiting junket. So it's just an amazing deal, and I think now with social media and they've relaxed some of those rules, and there's a lot. You have to be answerable, not just to your players, which you have 100-plus players all the time, and then their families and their concerns and questions, and your coaches' families and their concerns and questions, but to the number of people you're recruiting, which could be at any one time 100 to 150 active recruits that you need to be up with, know their names, know their family names, know the people that are helping them make the decisions. And these things are 2 and 3 years in advance. You're talking about sophomores and juniors in college that are already committing to programs. And it's sort of a crapshoot because the reality is some of those kids develop and continue to improve. Others do not. Other late bloomers become just as good, if not better, than the people that you committed to the year before. So it's an ongoing thing that I think to stay on top of it requires a lot of help. And that's why you see football staffs that used to be 10 coaches. I mean, literally 10 coaches, 9 assistants and 1 head football coach. And one of the coaches was the recruiting coordinator. Another was the strength coach liaison and all that. And now you have 30 to 40 staff members that basically are involved with recruiting. They're involved with strength training assistants, and they're involved with evaluation. And I mean, it's just the way of the world. Football's a big business. It makes the majority of money for colleges, for college athletic departments, and needs to have the right amount of resources put into it.
So how did Chip Kelly, when he was out in New Hampshire, first get on your radar? And what was your thinking in hiring him as offensive coordinator? Were you looking to stay ahead of the curve and try something different on offense, or how did that story come together for you?
Well, it was a combination of I'd already decided to try to move ahead of the curve when I switched the offenses. You know, for many years, we had run my offense, my terminology, my offense. It was, you know, a combination pro style, but with some variability. And then when I hired Gary Croton, I told Gary that I wanted to run basically a one-back spread offense, shotgun, with the zone read being the primary play, and then everything coming off of that. Much like Utah, Bowling Green, some other teams were doing, Northwestern at the time. And so when he came in, he said, "Coach, that's great. I love that. I agree with you," because he had been the head coach at BYU, and he'd had to play Utah each year with Urban Meyer, and it put a lot of pressure on their defense. So Gary Croton, we did it for 2 years. we dabbled with the no huddle. In fact, the game that changed my whole idea about football was we were playing Fresno State at home. We were down 19-0 in the second quarter. And I said, we've got to change this. We've got to do something to create some momentum. I said, let's go no huddle. We went no huddle against Fresno State and scored 35 unanswered points. And in the middle of the third or end of the third quarter, their defensive linemen couldn't stand up. They couldn't even get in a stance. They were just standing there allowing us to do what we wanted to do. And so after that, I knew we had to create a system where we could do no huddle all the time. We were just calling our plays, and even though they knew our plays, they were still so tired they couldn't do anything about it. So when Gary left to go to LSU, I interviewed 7 people. And Chip was a guy that I had known because he had contacted me and come out and spent a week with us in the spring when we were putting in our new offense. He said, Coach, can I come out? He had known Gary Croton previously. And I said, sure. And Chip and I just talked a little bit. And then Gary and Chip would correspond during the season. And he would say, Mike, come on here. Look what Chip's doing. And we'd look at a play and say, yeah, I think that could work in what we're doing. So I interviewed 2 guys from the NFL, 3 or 4 guys from Division I, a couple of ex-head coaches, a couple of standing offensive coordinators, and Chip Kelly. And Chip Kelly was by far the only guy that we could take a step forward without having to take 2 steps back, because he understood what we were trying to do. He understood the terminology concerns about going to no huddle. In fact, one of the funny stories was when I hired Chip, we agreed on all this stuff on terminology. We kept my terminology. We just tweaked it. But then he said, Coach, I don't really care if we want to go no huddle. And I said, no, Chip, I want to go no huddle. And my offensive staff did not. They did not want to go no huddle. They weren't comfortable with it. They knew it would change the way we practiced. I said, guys, this is the future of college football, certainly for Oregon and for what we want to do and who we can recruit. So, and I didn't talk about the 2007 season. When I talked about national championship contenders, I think that team with Dennis Dixon that year, had he not gone down, there's no question in my mind that we would have won out and been in a national championship. But, you know, it just shows how crucial some players are for your program and your system. And actually, Nate Costa, who just returned this year to the program, was the backup or third string quarterback who would have been able to save the day, but he got knocked out in the last fall camp scrimmage. Somebody fell on his knee and he had to have surgery. So it was one of those deals where sometimes the stars align in a positive manner and sometimes they don't. But long answer there to that question. But I think that, you know, hiring Chip was a guy that I never worried about where you came from. I watched what you did on film with your players. I liked what he did. I like his understanding of football. He had coached on both sides of the ball. He understood offensive line play and he understood quarterback play. So he was a perfect fit for what we wanted to do.
Well, Mike, you could listen to these stories all day probably. It's great to catch up with you. Congratulations on your selection for the UO Athletics Hall of Fame. We appreciate you joining the podcast, and we will look forward to seeing you back at Autzen Stadium in the fall.
Thanks, Autzen. Thank you very much, Austin. That's great, and it'll be fun for me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Duck Pod. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts.